I need some water.
Yeah. Anybody wants tea? There's hot water there. She's going to go get some water. So be hydrated. I need some. It's nice through Facebook seeing pictures of everybody doing everything and hearing recordings of classes and all that stuff. You know.
Now people in Portland can hear this.
Yeah, yeah. So let's begin with a prayer. You want to pray?
No.
Okay. Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Friend, beloved God.
Friend, beloved God.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Krishna Babaji.
Krishna Babaji.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Sri Yukteswar.
Sri Yukteswar.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Saints of all religions.
Saints of all religions.
We bow gratefully at your feet.
We bow gratefully at your feet.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
For spiritual family.
For spiritual family.
For all the blessings of this life.
For all the blessings of this life.
Help us to tune into your ray.
Help us to tune into your ray.
To share your love and light.
To share your love and light.
With this world in need.
With this world in need.
Bless us tonight.
Bless us tonight.
Harmony and joy.
In harmony and joy.
Om.
Om.
Peace.
Peace.
Amen.
Amen.
Let's just meditate for a minute. Amen. Thanks for coming, everybody.
You for coming.
It's a short trip for
us. So this all started when my grammar school in San Francisco, class of 1966, started sending out emails about the fact that there was a 50-year reunion going on there, and it just kind of started magnifying, and I just thought, well, that would be really fun to go to, and then while we're there, let's come here. So we've been here for the last week or so.
His school was in San Francisco.
Yeah, so. And we stopped at the village on the way down and went to the minister's retreat there, so it worked out really nice. Didn't get to go to Inner Renewal Week this time around, but the vibe there was so nice that I just, mental note next year, make sure to be there for that week, you know, because it felt really good. But one thing is that the weather here is different. It's been extraordinary. And it's just so perfect here. It's been perfect here. In fact, almost a little too perfect. It almost seems as if somebody has declared that it always should be perfect here or something like that.
It's true. It's true. Alan's made it
it clear. The climate must be perfect throughout the year.
A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December, and exits March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September in Camelot. Camelot, Camelot, I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8, the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happy ever aftering than here in Camelot. So that's what it feels like. I've always suspected that that's what it was here, but
you set the
know.
Bar pretty high here. The whole night has to be like a musical number.
It's true.
Yeah.
The crowd has made it clear.
So we just thought we'd share a little bit about, you know, what it's been like for the last 2.5 years up there. And, you know, like what it's like at Laurelwood, at our place in town, at the school and community and such. And then just throw it open for questions in general. And kind of have it be informal that way. Hi, Kupamai. So, why don't you start?
Oh. Well, Laurelwood is, I mean, the valley there is just so incredibly beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places on the planet, as far as I can tell. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And so you have that going for you. And our farm is on this little hillside. It's a gentle slope on the hillside, so the valley just spreads out around us. And so it's just an ideal location. And then Laurelwood is across the highway from us, and they're on the other slope of the valley, and they really have the view down the entire valley. So it's just such an incredible spot to be. And the original property was 50 acres, and that's where the school used to be. That's where all the school buildings are. That's the campus. And that part of it is going really well now. It was a little rough with the college there, but then now that the college has, once the college moved on, it was a lot more peaceful and calm there. There wasn't the
two separate entities.
Yeah, two separate entities that didn't really, they weren't compatible. So now everybody's working together on the same thing, and it's moving really nicely. Everybody pitches in wherever help needs to happen. So it's just much more camaraderie and calmness and joy. It's really nice. What we've learned is that the best thing that we can do there is host retreats. At first we tried having our own retreats, like a healing retreat or a yoga retreat, meditation. And, you know, we get 3-5 people, you know, it just wasn't really, you know, we were invisible, you know, same problem that can happen so easily. But then we started finding and being found by organizations that wanted to have their retreats there. So they would do their own promotional stuff, they'd find their participants, and then they would just all arrive, and we'd have the rooms ready for them, then we'd cook them this great food, and we'd host them in this very gracious manner. They love it, it's so beautiful, the food is fantastic, so they come back again and again. So last summer, we were actually booked solid for the entire summer.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and I have to qualify that a little bit, because not all the beds were filled, but we had you know, 80 people, then 12 people, then 14 people, then 100 people. You know, I mean, we were booked solid all the way through. And almost always they book again for the following year. So that is filling in very nicely. And I hesitate to say this in such a big group because it was true at one time, but I think it's still true that summer income kept us in the black for the whole year. So we're at the point where we're not about ready to go under financially, retreat facility. And what we're focusing on now is developing certification programs for things that we already do there. So certification in permaculture, so that people will want to come and learn how to do permaculture, and they'll work side by side with the people who are already doing that. And then they go away with a certificate that they can then put on their resume, and it enhances their job potential. So Dana Anderson brought this idea from Assisi because they've had a lot of success with it there. And she said, for a workshop, you know, maybe you can charge $40 and four people will come. You do the same thing with a certificate and you can charge $200 and 30 people will come. So just reframing it a little bit gives people something that they can take away from their experience and improve their professional life in some way or their personal life. Now they know how to manage their own garden better, something like that. So we're focusing on identifying the areas where we can offer certification programs, developing the curriculum. One that I think will be really successful and that will really help us is just a construction certification. And is it building with Dharma? No, Dharma?
I'm not sure. Something like that.
Something like that. Because we have growing Dharma and then building with Dharma. You know,
Dharmic
the theme.
Builders.
And Diva's, I mean, he just has so much construction knowledge and experience under his belt. So he's sort of spearheading that effort, and he's asking people to commit either 1 year or 2 year to the intern program or to the certification program. And at the end of it, then that person should be able to go take the general contractor's license and actually get their general contracting license. So it's a huge opportunity for people who want to learn it. It helps us with construction, plus they pay us while they're staying there. So it's going to really flesh out our facilities and our residential structure and all of that. So that's one of the main focuses now.
The other thing that's happening is that the housing, you know, so there's the 50 acres that was the main campus that way back when was a Seventh-day Adventist high school or grammar school, something like preparatory school.
Yeah.
500 students and staff back when, thriving, just, you know, like a whole village unto itself, a whole community, spiritual community. But then, you know, economic times changed, and over the decades that, you know, kind of income went down, and then they picked up and moved to Eugene, which was where their main center was, and then it was abandoned for a couple of decades or so. Other people tried to come in there. It was going to be a minimum security prison for a while, so we're glad that didn't happen. And then Ananda came, and, you know, it was perfect because you can't create things like that nowadays. The zoning wouldn't allow it. You can't buy things like that nowadays, except this was available. And so it's a big fixer-upper, just like this community was back when. And but, you know, Diva just loves big projects like that. It's a lifetime project, a lifetime opportunity for fixing things up. But little by little, you know, there's one huge dormitory building that's been all revamped pretty much, and now the second one, little by little, is about ready to come online.
It's not ready to come online. It's ready to
be started.
Start the process of coming online.
And there's groups that would come and stay if we had the rooms. And we just don't have the rooms for the really big ones. So it's a kind of catch-22 that they would come and give us the income if we had the rooms, but we can't develop the rooms till we have the income to fix them. But little by little, it's feeding in there. So it's happening. And then after the 50 acres with the buildings was bought, then a year or two after that, Ananda was able to buy the other 175 acres surrounding it, which was already designated for housing development. and it was a developer that was going to come in and like cookie cutter 5-acre lots, you know, on top of all this beautiful farmland. And so by purchasing it and then working with the county, et cetera, Diva and crew was able to restructure the zoning in such a way that the housing can be clustered now and the farmland can be preserved, the wild land can be preserved, and it's more conscious, like on a village.
It's actually the same zoning, but the lots were drawn differently.
Yes.
Instead
yeah.
of 5-acre lot, it's like one really skinny lot, and then the house is at the head of it. So,
but it is gorgeous, you know, location.
Yeah.
So there's the first 5 houses are available right now. I mean, the properties. You buy the property, you build the house, and I imagine there's guidelines for that, or you know, working with it to make sure it's harmonious and all that. But somebody's already purchased the first one and is building that now, and the other ones are up and ready and to be sold. And then after those 5, then the next 5. So phase by phase, it'll happen. So that's a big story.
How many total?
35 to 40 total.
And we started with the easiest ones because this has never been done before, especially in Washington County. So the Planning Commission is a little bit like, you want to do what? And that means more work on our part to make sure it's okay. And I'm like, no, maybe. So we started with just the first 5 that are the most cleanly drawn, redrawn lot lines, and just try it with a small chunk. And then once they, it's an odd situation because they love the idea of clustered houses and preserving the marshland and the wildland and the farmland, but it means a lot more work for them, so they'd rather that we didn't do it. So they're sort of caught too. So we're making it as easy as we can for them to get used to the idea, and then once the first phase is done, then we'll approach them about another cluster.
They're hip enough to say, you know, this is the future, this is what we want to be doing.
Yeah.
It's just that the laws aren't written for that, pretty much, so they have to kind of, you know, it's like rising Dwapara, and we have to figure out how to write the laws that accommodate the Kali Yuga laws that allow for the new ones, and you know, just support it and make it happen.
So we have a balloon payment that's due in May.
5-year, you know,
yeah.
It's been 5 years since the
and
first loan.
It's unfriendly money, and they would love to see us fail. So we're in a little bit of a tight spot right now.
Divine Mother loves to get drama. All the time. Erica, dear, does your dad ever like talk to you about this stuff?
I'm careful what I ask. Yeah,
he doesn't sleep much, I don't think.
So, I'm a little curious about, okay, when you do these lots, you said like they're a long, skinny thing, the house is
right here.
So are there restrictions on what people can do with their lots?
There's how they finally worked it out is that there's, and I believe this is the most current information, is that there's agricultural easements on it. So you can build on maybe a 1/4 acre or a 1/2 acre. I mean,
something
it's
like
a good sized area that you can have your house and actually develop it. But to the general public, it looks like they're paying for 5 acres, but they only get a 1/2 acre. Why would they do that?
Yeah.
You know, they don't understand community that you buy, you buy 5 acres and you actually get access to 225 acres. Mm-hmm. So it's
education.
It's a hard vision to sell to the general public. So.
But little by little.
How much is each lot?
It's about
$250.
$250 for the land.
Yeah.
And then the house is the.
Yeah, so it's a good price for 5 acres, I only get to use as much of it. It makes people hesitate. So we're having a little bit of trouble. That was what was going to pay for the balloon payment, so we have to.
How much is the balloon payment?
$1 million.
Wow.
And meanwhile, in town, the Living Wisdom School, it's pretty much duplicating exactly what Palo Alto did. It's bursting at the seams. It's got classrooms filling the temple, along with, you know, their own school building. And they have an apartment building that's on the property that's been rental income for a long time, and they tore that down, and they had Ponderanga design a new building that's gorgeous, and it's half built, and it's gorgeous but unfinished, and just about weatherproofed, I think. And, you know, they're out of money for that. So they need to drum up the, you know, and hopefully get that done by the end of the school year so it'll be ready for the next school year. And they're, you know, God bless them, Rose Neal is the principal there, just like Helen is for here. And she's great, just like Helen is, where she's just, you know, the parents are just a good group there. They're really enthusiastic, they're involved, the kids love being there. And, you know, just little by little, they're getting it together.
I think we had a waiting list of like 20 students or something. It was a pretty sizable waiting list. So there's a real need for that school to be large.
And it's visible. You know, it's in Beaverton's, a suburb of Portland, but it's a real city all by itself. And there's big companies like Intel and, you know, Nike's headquarters is there. So there's a big energy there for that. And, you know, good income from people. So, it's interesting with the church because, you know, Palo Alto is a big enough presence where Ananda being right there is visible. Beaverton's a little bit off enough from Portland where there's a lot going on in Portland, but the church in Beaverton is just a little bit in the suburbs and not as visible. So people come, but it's kind of like...
It's out of the way.
It's a little out of the way, and plus which, Portland is just a little more laid back and relaxed and, you know, and content, you know, with the way things are than Palo Alto, dynamic, let's change, you know. So it's just, it's different, you know. You just have to kind of accept when you're there that this is not Palo Alto, this is Portland, this is Beaverton.
There's not very many type A personalities there, so it's hard to get things up and going.
But it's friendly. I mean, I have to say, when we flew up there the first time for an oratorio concert that was happening at Laurelwood, you land there at the Beaverton Airport, and, you know, I went into this snack shop, and the teenager that was behind the counter was actually really present and friendly and talked to me and was really interested in what I had to say. And it was just like, wow. You know? So that's pretty common.
Yeah, people are content with their jobs. Like Oregon has a law that you can't pump your own gas. And the reason for that law is so that it increases employment. So that the gas stations have to have, you know, four or five, usually young men who are out there helping, doing all the gas pumping and washing your windshield and everything. And they love their job. You know, they're cheerful and they're serviceful and they're, I mean, they're content with their job. And it's not like, oh God, I got stuck doing this because I couldn't find anything better. And, you know, I deserve better than this. It's just, you know, as long as people have money to buy a cup of coffee and have time to sit down with friends, that's they're fine. So I can't blame them for being satisfied with their life, but it's just such a completely different energy. Used to working with.
It's like, how do you do the missionary thing? And no, you should be dissatisfied.
Say we're from Palo Alto, we bring the misery.
Yes.
Yeah. More, want more. And then don't want it.
Haven't you heard they wishing but not me?
Yeah.
Could you sort of review, because I have to say I have not kept up on all of the things, about Laurelwood is like part of Beaverton, and what's the difference, and, you know, and what happened to the school? I heard about that it's not in effect anymore.
College, right, yeah, as opposed to living within school.
Well, so there's Portland, downtown Portland, Portland City, and it's a lot like San Francisco, only with trees, but there's a lot of really neat little shops, and boutiques and tea shops, and it's just so great. Yeah, it's so great to just live there and walk out your door, and you're just in the middle of all this vibrancy. And then Beaverton is sort of like San Jose compared to San Francisco. You know, it's a residential area, so it's a little bit quieter. And the community is in Portland, but right on the edge of Beaverton, and then the temple is in Beaverton. Now Laurelwood is 30 minutes west of Beaverton, so we're 30 minutes away from the temple,
and 40 minutes from the community. Longer.
Yeah, there's like a little sub community, you might say.
Well, you know, so what is it like? The valley, it, like I said, it's a beautiful valley, and that school, that the prep school that used to be there, it was 500 students who boarded there, so they were there, you know, night and day. And then there were all the staff and the teachers and the administrators and everything. Plus, the Seventh-day Adventist, it was all Seventh-day Adventists, but, you know, there was a school and the community center. And so there's a little community right around there, maybe 100 houses, 100 houses, little tiny places. Some of them are falling apart, you know, but they've been there for 80 years or something like that. So that's all there, but there's not really a downtown area or anything. So when you're driving through this, if you know, it's like two blocks long, it's not very big, but... the campus is the major part on the south side of the street. It's just all campus, and then these houses are sprinkled around there. So it used to have a real community feel, but now it doesn't because it's dissolved. It's moved to Eugene, so now people don't really know each other. And as far as Ananda is concerned, there's the temple and the community that are 15 minutes away from each other, and then there's Laurelwood, which is a half an hour away from the temple. Dive and Ganga Mata are the spiritual directors for both, so they spend half of their time in town and half of their time at Laurelwood. Mm-hmm. And when it first started, you know, the people from the community just moved out there and helped get it started. So the community diminished a bit in devotee population, and it's taken a while to move, build it back up. But all of the energy was like, it was just so exciting. So a lot of things happened out of work days, and, you know, 80 people would show up, and, you know, let's turn on the heat, you know, because it's winter is coming. Let's figure out how to turn on the heat. And then over time, there's so much to do out at Laurelwood that people who live at Laurelwood pretty much just focus on getting things done at Laurelwood. And then, you know, most of them will come in for Sunday service, but not everybody can because we have guests on the weekend. We have to cook lunch, breakfast, wash up, you know, check them out. You know, Laurelwood has become more and more its own reality. So there's not that much mixing back and forth, but still the Glazers are spiritual directors of both. Mm-hmm. So that keeps it together. And when the community has a work day, a lot of people from Laurelwood would go in and help. We all know each other, sing in the choir together. Yeah, but it, just because of the massive amount of work out there, there isn't a whole lot of casual, you know, you want to get together for dinner or you run into each other at the laundry room. You know, that just doesn't happen between Laurelwood and in town. Does that answer your
That's
question?
A little better. And when I said school, you know, I meant the
college.
The college.
I heard that that had been disbanded, and I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
True. And what happened?
You know, I think whoever you ask will have a slightly different story of what went on, but and also because Donovan and I don't live on campus, you know, we see things a little bit at a distance and hear things secondhand. But what my understanding of it is that when the college moved there, they put all of their financial structure was put in place in the framework that there would be about 30 students. Mm-hmm. So 30 students would come and pay $1,000 a month in tuition. And then that would allow the finances for the school to occupy the administration building with all the classrooms, the auditorium, all the offices, and then that let them have a presence so that when prospective parents came, say, oh, it really is a college. You know, it's not an office with a single light bulb shining and, you know, one classroom with three desks in it. You know, I mean, it looks like a college. So that was sort of in place. But it didn't move forward the way it was planned because when we moved there, I think they had like 18 students. Mm-hmm. And then it went down to 12 students, and then it went down to 6 students. And instead of the faculty living on site, because it's dorm rooms, so the bathroom's down the hall, all your meals are down in the dining room. You know, and the, you know, like the Steinmetz, Bias and Janaki Devi, they live in their own house, and this couple live in their own house, and those people live in their own house. And so they didn't have the income from the staff living in the dorm rooms either. So Laurelwood covered the college for 2 years, and I think it was at the tune of like $100,000 a year.
Wow.
That they covered for the college. Wow. Just to let them have this little shelter so that they could grow. But they didn't grow, they diminished. Mm. And because of that diminishment, then the school board asked Nishala and Nakula to step down, and they put Nitai in charge. Mm. And it wasn't Nitai's vision. I mean, he did it because it needed to be done, but you know, stepping into somebody else's vision and trying to figure out how it was all working and how to make it work better, it's a hard thing to do. So he worked at that, and he had really good help, but he wasn't aware of this whole 30-student thing. And so when Diva came to him and said, so what are you guys going to do next year if you don't have 30 students? He said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, you know, we're supporting you guys to the tune of like $100,000 a year. And he said, you know, like, this is the first I've heard of this, you know. So then there was, you know, a misunderstanding between them, and there was nothing in writing, so it just got hard between the two leaders. So then it just sort of spread outward from that. But yeah, they didn't have a plan B. So at the end of that school year, they moved to another campus and tried to do a traveling school so that they would spend 3 months in India, learning about Indian culture, the spirituality of India, and then also in Assisi. So they were going to stay at ashrams, but they only had like 3 or 4 students, and it couldn't support the faculty they needed to travel. So it just all crumbled.
So that's the end.
So that's the end of that college. But now Nitai and Nakula Nakula and Nishala are starting something up again at the village, and I think that their plan is, I mean, I don't mind if somebody more knowledgeable says, you know, that's not right. But I think their plan is to do more of a master's program where it's mostly online, and then people come together for a month out of the summer or something like that. I think that that's more what they're thinking of rather than the original template of the college.
And they have property that they bought. It's across from the village, and they're going to develop that. Little
Tavisette
by little.
Road, yeah.
So, you know, they have a vision.
Yasa
so.
And Jonaki Davy still live there?
Yes, they are. And Jonaki Davy has this, she's had this vision from Master about Yogananda Gardens of the Northwest. So the two of them are really trying to develop that in the part of the property where it's mostly wild land. Mm-hmm. So it's steep, it can't be built on, but it'll be beautiful gardens, and it just has a spectacular view down the valley. Mm-hmm. So that's their focus now, is building up that garden.
And Gary Roller, who's, I'm looking to see if there's that bust of Master here, but the one that's by Master's kitchen door.
The small one?
The small one that's kind of lying on its side right now there, but you know, the one you've seen. He designed that way back when, and he's a well-known artist, bronze sculpturist, as well as a country music musician. Jonaki Davy got in touch with him and asked him about designing a bigger than life-size statue of Yogananda. About 8 feet tall, I think, now, is the plan.
Oh, I thought it was like 10 feet. I don't know.
It's about 8 feet, I think. Yeah. On a platform that may be rotating, you know?
Wow. So that pose of his where he's, you know, like this.
Oh, wow. Well, it was actually a new photo that I'd never seen before, and it showed Master kind of like this.
Oh.
And it was just like stunning. So I think they've changed it a little, so it's going to be more like this than this. But fact is that he's designed the whole prototype. He's made small statues. He's now, you know, working on it. But ultimately, it's going to be a 8 foot tall bronze statue of Yogananda that rotates and is lit, and you'll see it from all over the valley.
Where? Where are they putting it?
At Laurelwood, up on the rise there.
Oh,
you know.
Wow.
And so, you know, that plus all the gardens. I mean, this is a whole vision. And of course, ultimately, it'll take millions of dollars to really develop perfectly. But little by little by little, you know, they've been building paths, and there's a temporary shrine there. So you can feel it, you know, it's a nice vibe. Yeah.
I got the idea long ago that there was going to be some farming going on and some of that newly purchased land in like particularly where Yogananda Gardens is going. So maybe I read the topic right.
Yeah, Yogananda Gardens won't interfere with the farmland. It's more on the
someday.
Yeah, it's on the edge of the farmland, mm-hmm. near where one of the housing clusters will be. So, and it's down into what's now a little bit marshy, but Jonaki Davy wants to have a water feature, you know, manage the water going through so that it's beautiful rather than you sink up to your ankles in muck, you know. So it won't interfere with the farmland or the residential.
So how's that being financed?
How's that being
financed?
Oh, they're doing fundraising. So they have their own separate fundraising.
Probably effort. Selling copies of the statue, small copies, you know, that you can put on your altar, for example.
She would love it if you like. I mean, she loves the communication and energy.
Yeah, she has enormous enthusiasm for it. It's wonderful.
She's a channel, just comes through her, and she's just radiant with, like, you know, what's the next step? And then just Vyasa, too, he's just right there helping them out. They're great. They're, like, eternally young. You know?
I have a good story about their energy for this. We were there a couple of weeks ago for a farming gathering in Laurelwood, and they knew we were there, and they wanted to show us the area, because there's quite a bit there. There's a nice, really beautiful area carved out and a cement area, and where the statue is going to be is somewhat developed already. And we went up there and sat up there. But the day before we went up there, Jonica Davy came in for dinner, and she said, "Oh, I feel like I'm shaking a little bit." And I asked her what was happening. She said she had just gotten done spreading gravel on the path for us. And I mean, she didn't say for you, but she was spreading gravel on the footpath.
Yeah.
Because we were going to be walking up there the next day. So
and she didn't want it to be
muddy. Also, we're taking like a, what would be a wagon, but it's a big
like
wagon.
A garden cart, sort of.
Yeah, but it's, and they were dragging, they were, I don't know how they got gravel up the hill from where the gravel was, but they spread the gravel themselves.
I'll tell you a story too. When we moved there, part of when we bought our house, you know, the owner didn't need a lot of the equipment anymore because she was going to move to Roseville to a smaller place, take care of her dad and stuff. So it's kind of like, okay, I've got all these things that are here, like a driving lawnmower and, you know, things like that. And do you just want to make me an offer for it? And sure. So, you know, we've got this driving lawnmower and I've never done one of those things before. And she was actually, she's really good, just kind of like, okay, show me how to do this and, you know, get out there. So I'm kind of talking to Jonica Davy saying, you know, gosh, I don't know if I know how to drive one of these things. And she said, well, I was 80 when I learned to drive a tractor. So you could probably do it. Yeah, I could.
And he has.
Not even 80.
Wow. Yeah, and I mean, it's one of the dilemmas that Laurel Wood is facing now, because we just don't have the resources, both money and people, because nobody's there that can go up and help Jonica Davy and Biasa move this gravel, because we have to cook dinner for the 40 guests that are coming in a half an hour, you know. So it's this catch 22 of, it's such a great idea, but we don't have resources to put toward it, so that the great idea can't, it has to manifest real slowly.
It's like what I imagine the early days of Ananda Village might have been like, you know, because it's just a lot of enthusiastic people that are just there doing it, you know, and somebody has the vision and they're all tuning into it and just doing whatever they can. Yeah. But meanwhile, you just know that there's this group of masters that are sort of holding the whole thing and helping it move forward.
Yeah, and like the area that Amr was describing, there's like a wishing well with a master's meditating statue on it, you know, the one that's like this big. And then encircling that, looking out to the view, there's terraced retaining walls that you can sit on, and then that's all filled in with gravel. So it's just this real nice semicircle. And Sam and Pam Barone drove up and spent 2 weeks up there, and they built that wall for them. Mm-hmm. So the Steinmetzes are really good at bringing together what needs to happen next and making it happen. So it's moving forward. But
so,
it'll be nice when
so
we have Palomali more resources.
So Palomali and Yogesh are coming up?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, so that'll be wonderful.
Yeah. They are ostensibly still working 100%. She is for the Ananda Village Communications Department under Puru Shottama.
But then there's the other 100% of her time.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's so energetic.
Yeah. And, you know, we need marketing really, really bad. And we've always been looking around, who can do this, who can do this. And, you know, one thing and another, we just asked if they were interested in, you know, contract basis, still living at the village, coming up. And she talked with us, talked with all the departments. Yogesh came up too. And I asked the question, so like, are you mobile, you know? And we're not supposed to ask that because the village people are really supposed to stay there and stuff, you know? But she said, no, probably not, you know, because Yogesh is in college. I mean, he's taking courses, and she's committed to doing things. So maybe another year or two, you know, kind of thing. And then the next thing, I'm watching her on a webinar, and she's saying, hi, this is Kalamali of Ananda Village and soon to be Ananda Laurelwood. And I was just like, what? So on the way to the airport, they just had this inspiration that this was for them. This was their next step. And they talked to Jyotish and Devi, and that, you know, to their credit, they just, Kalamali said that they just really respect, you know, people's intuition, their intuition, and that, you know, if they knew that was their next step, then Hari Bol. So.
Yeah, that they both felt that they couldn't develop more at the village, that they needed to go into a new phase, and that it was best for their spiritual growth. So then, of course, Jyotish and Devi said, you know, that good.
And Yogesh, I've heard two different things, so I don't know which is true yet, but I'll tell you both. And one is that, you know, he was found out that another college up there was the perfect timing where he could segue into that, and or that he just decided, well, no, he didn't really need to continue with the college thing. He could just help out with whatever's needed there and, you know, focus in that way. So we'll
see. With his other 100%.
Yes.
How old are they?
20s?
Yeah, mid-20s, yeah.
Very mature.
Baby on the way.
Very knowledgeable.
They're going to be launching the family, new family.
Baby on the way, yeah.
And they're going to be living in a dorm room, you know.
For starters, yeah. I mean, for starters. But I mean, you know, I just, they have a baby in the oven, you know, so I just assumed, oh, they'll want to be at the village with all the other babies that are happening there and stuff.
No, they're starting the first babies in Portland. Yeah. And then now you guys are going to start having babies. Yeah.
We have llamas and chickens and cats.
Yeah. How are the llamas?
I'm glad you asked, Erica. Thank you. They're doing well. We have four llamas. How many people have been up to visit the llamas?
Wow. We finally realized that people come to visit the llamas and that we're just insane. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, we don't
Whatever. So two of them that are at our house, two of them are boarding at Laurelwood.
They're not really boarding. They're more on vacation.
On vacation at Laurelwood. But Laurelwood has lots of green grassy fields. And we have a limited amount of green grassy field. And we've torn it all up recently, excavating our pond and having tractors run all over the muddy hillsides and stuff. So there's lots less grass than there normally would be. Yeah. And so two llamas is about the max that our place can take. Yeah. And the
We'd
other
rather
ones,
have all four of them over there until our grass grows again. But there isn't enough shelter for them over there. Mm-hmm. So until we get through the really cold weather, I'm not comfortable them being over there because they have a pecking order, and the same llama is going to get shoved out into the cold all the time. So we'll wait until maybe the end of this month might be safe to bring the other.
It's working out well.
How did the first grooming go? I know that when we were up there, you were worried how it was
going to
go.
It's been an adventure. These llamas, we rescued them. They were destined for the meat packing plant because the gentleman who owned them was elderly and just felt like he couldn't take care of them anymore. Their job was to mow his pasture, and so they were neglected for several years. Mm-hmm. And then before that, they were abused. So they're very wary of humans. And, you know, they're a little bit wild. And so what we can do is we bring them into our stable and into a stall, which is 8x8, maybe?
Yeah.
So they're not confined, but they can't get away from us. So I have hand shears, and I shear them like this as they're walking around the edge of the stall. And then my arms get tired, and I wait, and then I, you know, follow them around the stall again. So it's not okay with them.
But one of them has allowed himself to be more or less sheared, and half of the other one has allowed himself. And the other two have said, no way, are you touching me?
Yeah, that was the first year. And then last year I've sheared 3 1/4 of them now.
What do you do with the fleece when you get out?
Well, because they were neglected, the fleece is so matted. I don't think it would be useful. Maybe in some sort of matte, you know, felted art, but I don't think it can be spun. So now that we've gotten the mats off of 3 1/4 of the llamas, what's growing back isn't as matted, so that we might be able to do something with. But, you know, it's more my shearing abilities, because their fiber might be that long, but when I can grab it and they're walking around it, you know, I can cut off 1 inch and then 2 inches, you know, so I have all these little chunks. So my technique has to improve too, so that there's something that you can actually weave together into a yarn. So right now, I think what's going to happen, because I saved all their fiber, not knowing what to do with it, but I think it's going to get added to our berms, our new berms, so that it fills in the berms.
Glad you asked about the berms. So there's this thing called Hugel Mound, Hugel Culture. Anybody ever heard of that?
No.
Okay, Permi people. So, yeah, there's these various permaculture people, guy Sepp Holzer in Austria, that's one guy, and there's others, and It's basically where you have a mound of earth that has at its core, like logs and sticks and wood and things like that, lots of organic material, and then material that's built up on top of that, and then ultimately it becomes kind of a growing thing. So instead of a flat piece of earth that things are growing on, it's a mound that things are growing on, but it, you know, it's got this organic material in the middle that feeds it, and there's probably something really smart about how it retains moisture and all this stuff, I just don't know. But when, you know, up till then, we'd been chipping lots of limbs and branches that we had cut down and stuff. And
it was a lot of work.
And then when we tuned into this hugel culture thing, and then when we visited with Kameno Island and their farm there, and we saw them doing that, I think the light bulb kind of went on. And we thought we could do that on our hillsides, which are steep, and put them on contours, you know, like swales or whatever they're called, to, you know, retain the water and maybe make more grazing ground for the llamas and all this.
And then as they break down, they also add nutrition to the soil downhill from them. So these pastures have been overgrazed for quite a while, so it'll help the overall health of the entire hillside.
So when our pond was excavated and there was tons of mud, there's probably a better word for that, organic, rich organic pond material. And the guy said, what do you want me to do with all this? We said, berms. So we have these huge mounds of pond muck that are preparing to be rich berms in the future as we gradually add stuff to them and all this. And it's really fun because our elderly Seventh-day Adventist neighbors who drive on the road right above us all the time. This is a quick segue, but we had a really fun encounter Christmas time where we and Ananda were invited to come over to the Seventh-day Adventist church for a Christmas carol performance. And so that was a first and very sweet, very informal, low-key, small, you know, and we were about half the church. And then afterwards, we're sitting around having tea and cookies and stuff, and Diva looks at me and says, what do you think about singing whatever it was that he suggested, the Christmas mystery. And I'm kind of like, I don't know if they've asked, if they've bargained for this or whatever, and so I'm sort of like overly conservative and stuff, but he's a little more visionary. And so he asked somebody else, and they said, I think it would be a good idea. You know, so. So we sang it and people liked it, you know, and it was just a nice connection. Now, what's my point? Oh, yeah, my point is that we're talking with kind of the elder statesman who was the kind of, like, I want to say the Diva of the Seventh-day Adventists. I mean, he's been there for decades, and he's the guy, his name is Malcolm Marino. He's the guy that basically created most of what you see there, that Seventh-day Adventist infrastructure and the whole Laurelwood Academy.
Yeah.
All that stuff. I mean, he's done it all. He knows it all. He created the water company that we have now and, you know, this and that. So he's just the man, you know, and he's in his late 80s and is still going. And so he's sitting around too and, you know, we're just talking and he says, so what are those things that you've got on there? You know, they're berms, Malcolm. So it's a fun, you know, connection there.
But we planted, the first year we were there, we planted 45 fruit trees and we put deer fencing around them so they can become food for us if we want them to be. And then we have raised beds that we've increased. We start out with two and then the second year we made two more, and then this year, this fall, we made two more that aren't quite finished yet, but they will be in time for spring planting. So we'll have a good-sized vegetable garden. We've been doing a lot of this preserving, canning, and dehydrating and stuff. So it's just so joyful and so rewarding, for me at least, to be out on that hillside working with the soil and with the animals and just with that view spread out around us. I have never felt such deep joy as when I'm on that hillside working with whatever I'm doing that day. So it feels, it's something that we talked about at the farmers retreat because, you know, Swami encouraged all of us to find these rural retreats where we could go and gather in times in case of hard times, mm-hmm. and I'd always thought of it as just a way to escape and be there. But now that we all actually have these places and we're working the land, and it's a deep spiritual experience to be doing this. And I've not experienced it this way with other vegetable gardens that I've had. There's something about working with that whole hillside, or working with the whole farmland, or working at it.
You probably found that here at
Half
the Moon Valley
Bay
Farm.
Farm. It envelops you. It's quiet. It's not in the middle of a hustle bustle city in your backyard. There's something deeply spiritual going on all these farms. And when Zach and Haley, who are the main farmers at Camino Island, when they were down at Spiritual Renewal Week last summer, Zach was one of the speakers on one of the panels, and he said during that talk, he said, yeah, you know, they asked us to go out and, you know, take charge of this farm, and we thought we were going to go out there and learn about farming, and that's not the case at all. And then he went on to talk about something completely different. And so when we went up to Camino Island, we said, what did you mean by that? And he said that what they're discovering is pretty much the same thing, that people will come, devotees or not, or strangers, will come to the Camino Island farm to pick up tomatoes, or, you know, just come out to the farm and see what they're up to. They have a lot of exposure through farmers markets and CSA, so people know about them. So they come out to the farm just to see it, and they start the conversation by talking about tomatoes or, you know, chickens and how they help the farm, but they always end up talking about God, because there's something magical about standing on that Camino Island property. We went up for 2 days and we were just going to use it as a launch pad. We were going to go into town and see that
Jimi Hendrix Museum and
yeah,
the glass guy.
Yeah, that phenomenal glass artist and the Bouchot Gardens. We were just going to use it as our home base and go do all these things. We were there like 10 minutes, and it's like we didn't want to go anywhere else. All we did was stay on that farm for 3 days. Mm. It was absolutely magical. And it just makes you stop and wonder, where does that come from? Because I've been on farms before. I was raised on a farm. But when Ananda has a farm, there's something deeply spiritual that happens. There's the devas rejoice or something. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. But I feel it a lot on that hillside when I'm out there doing my daily project, whatever it is. So we're thinking more and more of it as a possible form of outreach. You know, when the fruit trees get bigger and the berms are actually producing their wonderful stuff, and, you know, we'll do a U-pick orchard, and just, you know, people will come up and we'll just, you know, it'll be a way for them to experience the spiritual truths that some people can sense and some people don't have a clue about, but it'll be another form of outreach.
We call it unofficially the Llamas and Niyamas Farm.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like, so what are llamas and niyamas? I'm glad you asked.
No, two of the llamas have Yama names, and two of the llamas have Niyama names. So we're the Llamas and Niyamas farm.
And as Priya Wong, Priya and Bimal live up there, and Priya, who has lived in Argentina.
Yeah, what's your name before Priya?
Sandy Ross, yeah. And then Sandy Wong, Priya Wong. But she lived in South America for a long time.
Yeah.
And as she will remind you that the proper Spanish pronunciation is Yama.
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah.
So it really is Yamas and Niyamas.
But we spell it LL.
Yeah.
Llama. So Dambara named the llamas, and I named the chickens. So we have Hermione and
Tonks,
and all the professors. So these are all Harry Potter names for people.
Jenny.
Jenny and Lily and
McGonagall.
Molly. And, pardon?
McGonagall.
Yep. McGonagall and Rubbly Plank and
Those of you that are not Harry Potter people will not know what I'm talking about.
But you can just tell the difference between our reading material.
And the llamas' names are?
Ahimsa and Satya, Santosha, and who? Oh, Prani.
Prani, which is short for Ishvara Pranidhana, which is devotion to the Supreme Lord.
When you're really mad at him, do you yell?
No, because I can't remember it.
Prani's the one girl, and she's the real cutie. She's the black one with the long eyelashes, you know, that flutter at you. But she is strong-willed, and she will not take any guff.
She's the littlest.
She's the littlest, but she's the biggest energy, I think, when she really needs to be. So.
Her great friend is Satya, who is the biggest of the llamas, and who is also the easiest, most easily spooked. He's nervous about everything, so his eyes are always like watching, and you know, we can throw him stuff, apples and stuff, and he'll pick them up and eat them, but he's the one that I've only sheared a quarter of him, his shoulder blade. But Prani protects him. So it's the littlest one protecting the biggest one. And it's just so sweet.
So you have a retreat up there, because you were saying you were getting meals and so forth. I mean, I'm not exactly clear about that.
At the retreat?
There is a retreat.
Yeah.
That's what Laurelwood, the Ananda-centered Laurelwood, is mainly a retreat facility.
Oh,
it's chartered as an educational facility just because that's the way it was and still is. And so in order to live there, you have to feed in somehow to the educational part of the campus. Mm-hmm. So either you're on staff supporting classes, retreats, etc., you know, or somehow you're tapping into that. You can't just come and live there. But you can come and buy a house in the community that's next door, or live in a house outside or whatever. It's just the way it works.
Yeah, and another part about the, I was describing the certification project before, another part of it is that all of them will have an element of Ananda's teachings in it. So all of them will include a section on the yugas and how to meditate and yoga postures. So they're all still Ananda spiritually based, but they learn these things that they'll recognize as something they can take to the outside world.
And every month we have a first timers retreat, which is not necessarily the first time visiting Laurelwood, but the first time taking meditation classes and such. So they're taught meditation, and you know, there's a kirtan, and so they love it. You know, they come, they get the vibe. Basically, anybody that comes there, and just like the expanding light, you know, you spend a couple of days there, and it's just like, oh, your aura changes, and you just love it and want to stay longer or come back.
And some of our core members have come out of those first-timer weekends. They get it as soon as they're on the property for more than 24 hours. They get it, and they go home and sell their stuff and come back and live there. So it's a real... easy way for people to come and experience it, and then the ones who should stay are the ones who come back and stay.
So that's your main occupation, and the two of you working at the retreat, or weren't you?
We're retired. We're busier than ever, but we're just kind of volunteering and plugging into various things, and just kind of as we feel to, or as we're asked to.
So I go over and cook in the kitchen two or three times a week, depending on how busy they are. And then I'm part of the cook's group, so I go to the meetings once a week, because not all of the core members are Ananda devotees. Mm-hmm. So when the cooks come together to pray at the beginning of prep, whoever's the lead cook is the one who leads the prayer. So it might be an American Indian prayer, or a Buddhist prayer, and then there's an Ananda prayer once in a while, and then there, you know, so there's all these different spiritually based devotees of their own path. And so Yudhishthira asked me if I would be part of the cook's group just to bring some Ananda vibration into the group. And it does help a lot, because if something isn't working right, the other cooks will talk about, well, so-and-so did this, and it, you know, like, it really messed up the whole process. And that happened to me last week, too, and it was another person, but it was the same thing. And I can't get this person to wash his hands, you know, and you know, problem, 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 problem. And so I'll say, you know, okay, we've talked about the problems. Let's move from problem consciousness into solution consciousness and start thinking of how to fix this. And so it just helps us accomplish something in these meetings instead of griping. And everybody who lives there is in the Cities of Light program, so no matter what they're doing, on Wednesdays it's the Cities of Light day. So they have classes and they have satsangs, and I think all of them have taken Raja Yoga. So they know a lot about the teaching. So when somebody says problem consciousness versus solution consciousness, they know what that is, and they know it's a good thing, and they buy into it. It's like, oh, right, okay. So, but, you know, it's not part of their automatic response yet. And Marian Rogers, who is Swami's, she's in that group too. So she and I, between the two of us, can sort of get the energy to focus more on what we're going to do and how we can change things so that it starts working better, instead of just worrying about what's not working. So we help in that way. It's so funny because they always talk about us as, you know, as it's so good to have you here because you're such, you know, you're long-term devotees. And I'm used to here where, like, even after 12 years, you know, I was the new kid on the block. You know, like, everybody has been here longer than me. So whenever this people say this to me, it's like I look around and see who they're talking about. But it's true, there aren't very many long-term devotees there. So we bring that to it. Because our house is off campus, it's an escape. So we have movie night over there, or invite people over for lunch.
It's like a mini Chela Bhavan. So,
so we add that to it. I wrote up a training manual for the kitchen because, you know, interns come and they might be there a month or they might be there 3 months, and depends on whoever's working with them. They might be shown how to do it this way, and someone else will show somebody else how to do it this way, and then there's an argument over what's the right way to do it. So that's something that we did in our cooks meeting, was come up with a standardized way to do everything that gets done in the kitchen, and then try to also make it align with Oregon health regulations, because we're not a commercial kitchen. Not all of it, our electrical stuff is up to code and stuff, so we can't become we need more resources before we can apply for a commercial kitchen license. But we want to be moving in that direction so that we know how to do it once we can get that licensure. So we put together this training manual, and so I helped with that. So anything, you know, most of the written stuff, I can do that, because everybody else is doing so many different things, they can't sit down and concentrate on writing a 3-page document, and I can do that. We are the leaders of the Sadhaka group this year. We did Sadhaka training it's 2 years ago that we did Sadhaka training. They hadn't had Sadhaka training there for 12 years.
Wow.
So there were a lot of people who had been there for a long time, but they had never gone through Sadhaka training. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Rose, the principal of the school, she went through Sadhaka training and then took Sevaka vows. Because she was so far along in her spiritual growth, the Sadhaka, you know, she didn't need to do that interim step, so she went straight to Sevaka. So now we're leading the satsangs and organizing that for them, and helping with projects that are Sadhaka manifested. So how within the Ananda system do you get new carpeting in the, you know, like something that they see that they want to change? How do they work with the temple team to actually make that change happen? Because they don't know how to do that. They're used to being spectators instead of participants. So we're helping them become participants. And they love it. They love being participants. Well, we all do. We want to see how we can be involved. And that wasn't really there for them very much before. There wasn't anybody that had time to put their arms around that. So we do that type of thing. And Dhamma is starting to do, they call it the Maha schedule at Laurelwood, because there's 25 people and they all work 30 to 40 hours a week there, depending on what they pay in rent. You know, it's a sliding scale between seva and money. And so this person needs 30 hours, this person needs 20 hours. Those two people don't get along, so don't put them together. And then, you know, there's three meals to cook and three meals to clean up, and who's leading sadhana, and who's leading yoga postures, and who's on construction, and who's working in the garden, and who's doing the housekeeping, and, you know, so it changes every week, and it's a big job. So Dhamma is starting to learn that process. So we're fine, because we managed the temple for a year, so we were isolated even from Laurelwood. We just didn't have time.
I thought you did something like that.
So now that we're not managing the temple anymore, thank God, now we can start helping more and more with Laurelwood. So
you're pretty busy, you guys, aren't you?
We are. It's like, I didn't know retirement was going to be like this.
And then also Dana Anderson. I mean, Dana Anderson is in Assisi part of the year, and then she's at Laurelwood part of the year. Yeah, so she's there about maybe 5 or 6
she's
months
great.
Out of the year.
Wow.
And so she's helping with the whole promotional
effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, but just to make Laurelwood more visible.
Marketing.
Thank you.
She's good at social media, especially Facebook. And of course, Kalamali is brilliant at all that. So
yeah, and now that Kalam, you know, we'll see how they'll interact, because she's only there for a part of the year, so it needs to be a year-round effort. But I've been helping her with that, so we've got together this Facebook page that's called Simple Living Communities, and it would be great if you would all like that page.
Okay.
Yes, I know some of you already are, but Simple Living Communities. And so we have that, and I mean, Laurelwood has a Facebook page, but it's more on the teachings and what's going on with the community life there. And Dana wants this to be broader, like permaculture and the things that we're doing there, so that when we start advertising for these certification programs, there'll be something that people can go and look at, and it will make us more visible. So, you know, I'm writing blog posts and posting things on that. So I do that every day too. So we're slowly figuring out how we can best help, mostly to free up other people who need to be working on construction and getting the meals out and all of that stuff, so that they can just have a cleaner slate for themselves to work on.
So I thought I would say that this is about as long as I thought we'd take, maybe about an hour and a quarter, you know, just because tomorrow's Super Bowl. Oh, and Sunday service. So we just want to respect, you know, people's need to sleep and stuff. So if there's any other burning question, go ahead and ask.
What do you attribute your success of the retreats to? I mean, because it sounds like it's really successful.
Phenomenal food. We've had really good luck with great cooks. The beautiful setting. And that the staff who take care of the guests are so supportive and gracious, and that God is the guest is God. So that people almost unanimously give us that kind of feedback. Food was fantastic. I can't wait to come back again. Everybody was so nice here. I think it's those three things.
That's a word of mouth thing. I
think it's that we're becoming more and more visible on the internet, and that we don't have to re-find everybody. We get a lot of repeat. People sign up again.
So you advertise through Spiritual Retreats, well, that site, right? Is a site called Spiritual Retreats?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not.
But, you know, we kind of take that vibe sort of for granted, but when people come for the first time, it's just like, wow. You know, I mean, just like the expanding light again.
Yeah.
And they come and they just say, this is wonderful, you know, and tell me more. And so, it's good news.
Yeah. And they, you know, they feel it. They feel the energy of Laurelwood. It's a phenomenal energy. And all of a sudden, they don't care that the bathroom's down the hall. You know, they can't wait to come back.
I wanted to mention also that Portland itself, you know, is a big city, but it is very consciously limited to the development around it. So there's kind of a perimeter where you can develop this much within the perimeter, but the outside part of it is farmland, rural land, and they're really good about preserving that. But they will review every 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, whatever it is, enough, you know, like how should we expand in what way to make it a balanced growth thing, since there's more and more people coming, but still balance that with farmland. Mm-hmm. So it's real obvious when you drive from the Beaverton Temple to Laurelwood that it's city, 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 and then boom, it just turns into green farmland all of a sudden. And so Laurelwood is kind of, that's a difference between Laurelwood and this, is that it's really a rural area. And you just feel like you're in a beautiful rural farmland area without the busy city vibe kind of feeling. And people like that a lot. You just, you can't find that kind of thing unless you go to a really expensive, fancy retreat center, you know, like a hot springs thing or something. So it's kind of unique. And we just need to let people know about it. And little by little, people are finding out. That's good because, you know, we the people that are coming are kind of match the rooms we have available. And so it's, you know,
yeah. That's good.
So how about if we sing a song together after...
Just one quickie. You're not doing work for your clients anymore.
No, I retired April 30th a year so I almost have my 1 year anniversary of retirement. So.
But she is writing a spiritual science fiction novel.
I am.
Stay tuned.
Which I don't know how to do, but I'm figuring it out as I go.
She's a good writer.
I know.
You know,
blog posts. More llama. And Niyama posts.
Yeah, there haven't been those in a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are good.
So, I thought we could maybe sing along together, Home is a Green Hill.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yes.
Are you singing tomorrow at Sunday service?
Nope. You're it's not. the Davis singing group, and I'm going to enjoy them.
We could all get colds. You know. The city.
Please join if you know the words. Home is a green hill, home is a wind blowing betrayal far, far away. Home is a knowledge, heaven is near. Home's the end of the fray. Home is my heart's land. Home's where I am. Nothing can dim the light of my soul. Home is forever. Home is today. Home's a heart that is whole. Often I dream that life is a play. Laughter forever and skies never gray. But when I'm silent, free from all, I discover my home's everywhere. Home is a green hill, home is a wind blowing betrayal far, far away. Home is a knowledge, together. Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Friend, beloved God.
Friend, beloved God.
Great Gurus.
Great Gurus.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Babaji Krishna.
Babaji Krishna.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Sri Yukteswar.
Sri Yukteswar.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Saints of all religions.
Saints of all religions.
Blessed Friend Swamiji.
Blessed Friend Swamiji.
We bow to all of you.
We bow to all of you.
Thank you for the home in our hearts.
Thank you for the home in our hearts.
That we share with the world.
That we share with the world.
Thank you for our Guru Bhais.
Thank you for our Guru Bhais.
For the spiritual family.
And the spiritual family.
Keeps us connected.
That keeps us connected.
Wherever we are.
Wherever we are.
Om.
Om.
Peace.
Peace.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks, friends.
Thank you.
Please take some more paraleather away with you.
Great having you guys here. You know, there's a line from the movie.
Yes.
You had me at hello.